welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us.
The show will be archived, so if you miss it or want to hear it again, it is on our homepage, and we'd be delighted if you would pass it on to a friend as well. Got two really interesting guests this morning. First off is Tom Trabuca. He is the Director of External Affairs for the Federal Thrift Retirement Investment Board, and Tom has been doing this a long time. He's a veteran of the federal movement. He worked for a couple of federal unions, worked for NARF. You've worked on the Hill, so you've seen it from all sides, but you are, I guess, as close to being an advocate for federal employees as can be, in addition to being one. The TSP, and run over it real quickly, it's 4.4 million people.
4.5.
Okay. 4.5 million people, and this runs from presumably Vice President Biden down to the lowest clerk in a federal office.
That's right. We like to say from janitor to senator, and of course, Vice President Biden is the president of the Senate.
That's right. Yeah. And in the Senate, he was eligible for it. I'm sure he got in it. Also in the military, admirals, generals, down to buck privates,
yes,
and even retired feds and people who work for the government but who have left it, but many of them remain in the TSP. And one of the reasons, and one of the things you got to ask is, how come? And John Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Fund and the father of index funds, said the TSP is the best in the business. Alan Roth, who is going to be our guest later on this show, Alan Roth of CBS Money Watch, says he wishes he could get in it. He's looking for a way to get into the TSP. Every year, a lot of people come into government. They've had very successful careers in the law, maybe in medicine, in business, or whatever. But they come in with a lot of money in their own 401k plan. And a huge number of them, a significant number, switch over into the TSP. Now, they've had the best deals in the world, but they choose the TSP, presumably because the low administrative fees, which John Bogle loves, and also because of the G Fund, which is not available to anybody else. Can you kind of explain this phenomenon of the well-endowed coming in and putting their money in the TSP?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Mike, and maybe I ought to start out with some numbers.
Okay.
And the number for this year, to keep in mind, is $750 million, and we'll break that down in a little bit. Authority or the statutory approval of allowing people to take money from their 401k plans and put it into the TSP cleared the Congress about 10 years ago. And since that time, when people have come to the federal government after working in the private sector, many of them with 401k plans or 457 plans, they have an interest in consolidating their retirement savings. You know, if you have a little bit here and a little bit there, you might not have it invested in ways that are optimum. There's some overlap in some funds and some plans. They're all designed slightly differently. And it's tough to coordinate and kind of trim your sails just right if you're in a number of different investment plans. So Congress allowed us to put up this program where people coming into government or anybody who's in government can take money from their 401k plans and transfer it into the TSP. It's been very highly successful, as you said, likely because of the low administrative costs, the fact that the G Fund is only available to TSP investors, but also, I think, because the other choices are simple, straightforward, and understandable with no overlaps. The TSP investments are all discrete investments. If you're in one, you're not overlapping with another. We have the five core funds, the C Fund, which tracks the S&P 500, the S Fund, which tracks the Dow Jones Wilshire Completion Index, which is the rest of the domestic stock market, the International Fund, which tracks the Morgan Stanley IFA Index, which is 21 developed countries. We have the F Fund, which is a big bond, an aggregate bond index fund, and then the G Fund. Finally, in addition to those five core funds, we have five L funds or life cycle funds. And what these are really asset allocation models. These are professionally designed and they are intended to be a one and done kind of approach that you select the time when you intend to start withdrawing your money, pick the date closest to that and invest in either the L 2020, the L2030, the L2040, or the L2050 fund, depending on what your investment horizon is.
And a lot of mutual funds have those life cycle funds, and they're similar but not identical to yours. And that is the further out, the 2050, the year 2050, for example, is the Walk on the Wild Side fund, in that it has more stocks and whatnot. And the 2020 fund, I guess, which is the current one, is more conservative, and they grow more conservative each time they're rebalanced.
That's correct, and they're rebalanced quarterly. And you're right, they're not like the funds or like many of the funds that are out there with other in other plans. And this became clear in 2008 when we all remember with regret how the market tanked.
Yeah.
And a number of people were in L funds, which they thought had protected them because they were close-in funds. They might have been in a 2010 fund, but they nevertheless had a big allocation in stocks in those funds. And a lot of people who were close to planning their withdrawal were hit pretty hard.
That's when a lot of people got religion and went into the G fund.
That's right. Yeah, it is the well, as you have dubbed it, and it's picked up almost as well as your Inside the Beltway moniker that you bestowed on our Main Street here in Washington a number of years ago, that it never has a bad day.
Never has a bad day, yeah. Lots of good things to say about the TSP, and the numbers speak for themselves, and people, I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that in the private sector, if you have a 401k plan, you don't get a matching contribution from the government or your employer of up to 5%. I mean, that's huge, and that in itself is an incentive to put in at least 5%
to
get that match. That's all the good stuff, but there are critics, as you well know, and I well know, hear about them all the time. There are some people, a minority, but a vocal minority, that don't like the TSP. Some of them don't like the limits on trades. Now, they say they're not day traders, and they say they're not timing the market, but they will also in their emails and letters tell you that when they sense the market is going to go up or down, or their research has led them to this belief that they want to get in and out quickly or shift around. So that's one example. The other people, there are others who say that the government is either intentionally or unwittingly holding them back by not letting them do these quick trades and do any number they want to do, and also by not expanding the pool of funds that are available for them to invest in. And you and I remember, and over the last 10 years, there have been individuals and there have been political groups and there have been members of Congress who have lobbied for a REIT fund, Real Estate Investment Trust. They said, trust me, real estate will never lose. Well, don't hear from them so much anymore. But then there are people who want gold funds, precious metal funds. They want funds that are environmentally correct or socially correct. Some wanted a fund that would invest only in minority-owned businesses, and on and on and on. And a lot of people, and Alan Roth has talked about this, a lot of people in the private sector would love to have a piece of this action. This every 2 weeks, millions of dollars coming into their fund, the government doing handling and doing all of it. How come we don't have more funds?
Well, when Congress started this out, it wanted it to have a few choices, but distinct choices. So we started out with just three funds, the Government Securities Fund, Stock Fund. They said pick a well-known index for that. We picked the S&P 500 and then a bond fund. So we picked an aggregate index fund for the bond fund. However, Congress did say if more funds become desirable, the Congress can authorize them, which to us says, as the fiduciaries of the plan, to keep an eye on what's going on out there and what might be a good addition in the future. We did that. We periodically check our investments and take a look to see if additional investments might be good. In 1996, we decided that they would. We proposed two new funds, and Congress authorized them. They can authorize more as well. One thing the Congress did authorize is a mutual fund window, and we can talk about that a little bit if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great. We need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back on Federal News Radio. Your turn with Mike Causey, and today Tom Trabuca and Alan Roth. We'll be right back.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
We hear so much about energy security and how important it is to America. It's not a question of where we need to go, but rather how we're going to get there. At Lockheed Martin, we're exploring many pathways to energy security, energy efficiency, alternative fuels, renewable energy, storage, grid management and security, climate protection, even capturing solar energy stored as heat on the surface of our world's oceans. But there's another important question about energy security, the why. Here at Lockheed Martin, we believe that stable, affordable energy is one of the pillars of our nation's security. And so we're applying the broad spectrum of our capabilities to what's been called the space race of this generation. Securing our nation's energy future is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Japan has decided on the F-35 stealth fighter to replace its aging jets in its air force and bolster its defense capability. The selection comes at a time of high instability in the region, the death of Kim Jong-il, skirmishes between neighboring countries, and, of course, the Chinese pursuit of dominance in the region. Defense Minister Yasuo Ichikawa said they wanted a fighter with solid capabilities. I'm J.J. Green.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota's been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Is DOD improving financial information and audit readiness? What is DOD doing to improve its operations, become more efficient, and control costs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Bob Hale, Undersecretary of Defense and Comptroller within the U.S. Department of Defense, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Tom Trabuco. He's Director of External Affairs for the Federal Thrift Investment Retirement Board. Did I get that right?
Reverse the last two words. Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Okay, all right. I will get it one of these days. And coming up, we'll have Alan Roth from CBS Money Watch. We're talking about your congressional mandate and the fact that Congress said if more funds are appropriate, they will authorize them. They've only done a couple, and I haven't seen a push in a long time for the way we did, especially for the REITs.
That was right.
A major push, and at the time, really, I must say, really looked good.
It looked as though it was going to go through. They had, I think, 215 co-sponsors on their legislation, and of course, with 218, you can get a bill out of committee.
Well, what the REIT lobby said, too, and they were correct up until that time, they said, don't worry about housing prices. They said, that's different. This is real estate. Can't go wrong.
Right.
Well, I haven't heard much from them lately, but they tried.
That's right. Right. One thing that that debate, however, masked is the fact that we do have REITs in the TSP already. That's the beauty of the broad index approach that we follow. So our S fund and our the S&P 500 fund, the C fund, NRS fund, the small capitalization fund, both have REITs, about 1% of the S&P 500. And last I checked, it was about 5 or 6% of the S fund are REIT securities.
There's a minority, but a vocal minority, an intelligent vocal minority, who says they want more options, and if you're not going to add funds, and they're usually not pushing for that, they want to be able to take some of their money, some of their current money, and I guess some of their future contributions, and direct them to a mutual fund outside of the TSP. What's the problem with that, if any, and is it going to happen?
There may not be a problem, and it may very well happen, but it is not scheduled right now. In the TSP Enhancements Act of 2009, one of the items – there are two items left to implement from that act. The first we are implementing right now. Information will be going out late January, early February on it, and come the second quarter of the year, we plan to put up a Roth TSP. What we've done on that one is we're trying to coordinate it with our big annual mailing to participants. We send out their annual participant statements, 4.5 million statements. A lot of postage involved there, but it's something that we think it's important to do, and that's when we're going to announce to all of the participants how this is going to work. Then we put it up in the next quarter.
So it's definitely coming, Roth option.
It is definitely coming. Now, following that, we still have this issue of the mutual fund window, which Congress did authorize in 2009, but it did not require us to implement it. The reason they didn't require us to implement it is that there was a split view on the board of whether or not this is something we should have. There was a vote. It was a 2-2 vote. And there was a split in our Employee Thrift Advisory Council, which are the unions and associations representing federal and postal employees, because this could complicate the plan. And one of the things that they find so agreeable about the TSP is that it is simple and straightforward. Nevertheless, we will come back and take another look at this and see if it's something that does make sense for the future.
When I was at the Washington Post, we had a 401k plan, very generous. I think our match was 3%, but that was 3% more than most people got. And it was with Vanguard, very low fees, the second lowest fees in the business, second only to yours being the lowest. Very good plan, still is a good plan. And they allowed us a window to do this, various of us took money out. This was the 90s, and you couldn't lose.
Right.
You could throw a dartboard at the stock page and win. Some of us took money out, directed our own investments, were masters of our own fate. None of us did better than we would have had we stayed in the Vanguard program with its simpler life cycle funds or, S&P 500 funds.
Right. It is awfully tough because, let's face it, you're up against professional traders. If you're out there dealing in individual stocks, there are thousands, if not millions, of others who are spending their entire day watching what this company is doing, looking at what its prospects are, looking at the market in which it operates to see whether or not, compared to its competitors, it has a chance to be more successful and thus appreciate in value. So you're out there in the wild marketplace.
Well, there was a very interesting show, and I'm sure it was dumbed down for people like me, on PBS the other day, and it showed the psychology of investing, picking winners and picking losers. And they had five or six individuals, men and women, and they said they showed a certain product, and maybe one was a teddy bear and one was this and something. And they said, pick which one you like. And that's pretty easy. You say, I'll take the koala bear. And then they said, okay, now pick what other people are going to like. And that's a lot tougher. A whole lot tougher, and yet that's what you're asked to do often in investing, not what you think is right, but what you think other people are going to think is
sure.
Right.
Sure, and that's why they're saying you've got to take the emotion out of it. You've got to be analytical. You've got to have all those facts at your disposal so you can make a rational decision. It's no longer what you feel. It's what you reason after you look at all those facts.
Looking across the desk here, you seem to have a pile of interesting statistics. Could you show us what you got or tell us what you've got?
Sure. Why don't I go back to the three-quarters of a billion number, just
right,
for anybody who's hanging out there in suspense. That number relates to the dollar amounts that we have received thus far this year from people transferring funds from their 401ks into the TSP. Since the beginning of the year, starting in January, we've had 26,815 such transfers, totaling $709 million. The average is about $50 million a year, or $50 million a month, and I expect we'll get $50 million in this December. So that'll bring us up to $750 million. That number is somewhere between $4 and $5 billion now that we have collected from that since the program started.
And these are people coming into government, often first timers. Maybe their political appointees coming back, but these are smart people.
That's
They've
right.
made a ton of money in the private sector. They have flush 401ks or comparable vehicles, and they're saying, of all the choices I've got, I'm going with the TSP.
That's right. I believe our largest transfer in was an account balance of about $2 million. So these are highly successful folks. Many folks who are just regular folks, though, too, I will say that, who want to consolidate their retirement savings in one place to make it an easier item to manage and make sure, as I said, that your sales are properly trimmed. Another number that I have here, and this is something that's interesting to me as one of the old CSRS guys, and so for any CSRSers who are out there listening, we keep track of active participation in the TSP by category, whether FERS employees, CSRS employees, or uniformed services. And by active participation, I mean people who are still putting in money out of their payrolls. Every month we receive approximately $2 billion in new contributions to the TSP. CSRS employees over the past month have just dropped under 200,000 for the first time. We're now down to 194,000 CSRS participants who are contributing their own funds, and that number will continue to get down as the CSRSers pass from the scene. However, the numbers in the other categories continue to go up. We're up to almost 2.4 million FERS contributors and 710,000 contributors from the uniformed services. This is our new population. Members of the uniformed service have been able to contribute since 2003, and so they do not get a matching contribution as the FERS participants do, but it's a very good savings plan for them, and they may well find the Roth option extremely attractive when we roll that out next year.
Sure. Because this is a young population. Navy still leading the parade?
They are, yes.
They must be doing a bang-up job of telling people about this.
Right. I have a nephew who just joined the Navy. He's up in basic training right now in Great Lakes, and he said at the recruiting station they told him about it. So the Navy has really taken this aboard. Of course, they do have people on ships, too, so it's tough to get away from the message when they want to get it to you.
Well, back to the Roth option, because we're almost out of time here, but if someone wants to transfer money in to a Roth option, are they subject to that income limitation?
There is no in-plan. Two things are going on here. First of all, there's no in-plan Roth conversion. So you can't take your money that you've currently got in the TSP and convert it to Roth.
This comes from outside.
Right. Coming from outside, your new contributions may be contributed to the Roth option. I don't believe you can, and I have a chart on this back at my desk, which I neglected to bring. I don't believe you can transfer Roth IRA money to a Roth 401k.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay, Wilson, thank you, Tom Trabuco, for being with us. The time has really flown by here, and we'll get you on again before you depart the federal government. So thank you, Tom Trabuco. Stay tuned for Alan Roth with CBS Money Watch, and he's going to be talking about investing, looking at the TSP, and also other options. So thank you.
Thank you.
Be right back.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS-7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Previously on the Fed's telework panel discussion, sponsored by HP and Intel, Christina Morrison, government marketing manager at HP, discussed...
In the private sector, a lot of companies making the investment to arm their employees with the right technology and the right tools to work from anywhere. And that really helps extend a global reach in this environment. And with the 2010 Telework Act, we're waiting to see the federal government still step up and be where the private sector is.
Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Feds Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you missed the Feds Telework panel discussion on Federal News Radio, you can listen on demand at fedstelework.com on the issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. fedstelework.com.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High, the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
Fuel cell vehicles promise energy efficiency and less pollution, but the focus has been on using hydrogen as the fuel, and so far there aren't many places to fill up. So why not use gasoline to power fuel cells? Because until now, that's only worked under very high temperatures. But Eric Walksman, University of Maryland engineer, has increased the performance of so-called solid oxide fuel cells to bring the temperature way down, and...
That opens them up to running off of gasoline or diesel today, or biofuels in the near term, or hydrogen in the future.
He says the cells, which turn gasoline's chemical energy into electricity without burning, could provide backup power for electric vehicles and replace the internal combustion engine.
It'll still run off the gasoline that you can get at any street corner, but now it'll go three times farther and consume one-third the amount of gasoline and produce one-third the amount of CO2 and produce no emissions.
With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tom Trabuca of the Federal Thrift Retirement Board. He's, of course, the Director of External Affairs. We recorded that yesterday, so a number of you had emailed me questions that came in this morning, and obviously I couldn't ask him, but I will get back to you on all of those questions. And I hope you enjoyed it. And remember, all of our Your Turn shows are archived here on our homepage, so you can listen to them at home or later on at work, and you can pass it on to a friend if you want. I think this is a particularly good one because the TSP is, after all, it's going to be about a third to one half of the money you have to spend in retirement. So it is very, very important. And now I'm going to be talking with another expert on the Thrift Savings Plan, who I believe is a very big fan, Alan Roth, a columnist for CBS Money Watch, and he is based in Colorado Springs. Is that Alan?
That's right.
Yes. Well, how's the weather out there, by the way?
Today it's beautiful, sunny. We've got about 2 or 3 inches of snow, and we're supposed to get a little more tomorrow.
Okay. And it snows there, and then it blows away, right?
Yeah, we're very, very dry in Colorado Springs. If you go west on the other side of the divide, we get a lot of snow.
Good deal. Okay. So, Alan, I understand during World War II, and I believe even during the Great Depression of the 1930s, the government brought in a lot of experts, oftentimes very wealthy men, and I think they were all men at the time, to help with the government. They didn't want to, they didn't need the money, they didn't want the money, and so they called them dollar-a-year men. And I believe the government technically paid them a dollar a year for their services, and that way they could legally work for the government. And I understand you're anxious to be a dollar-a-year man.
Yeah, not because I'm generous, just because I want access to the TSP. I could cut my fees way down over, as you mentioned, the second lowest out there, Vanguard.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Seems that most federal workers and postal people and retirees and military personnel are satisfied with it. They're voting with their wallets, if you will. Every 2 weeks or every month, they're putting money into the TSP. And I think Tom said there are 4.5 million people in it now, including current feds, as he said, from the senators to janitors, from the vice president to the lowest federal clerk, and from admirals and generals to privates and whatever the Navy recruits are called. So obviously it's popular, but there's a significant number of people, and they're very vocal and they're very passionate about this, who think the TSP is an extension of the nanny state, that it's too careful, it won't trust them to be adults to invest on their own, and they want to be able to make trades swifter and more often than they do now. They say they're not market timers, and they're not day traders, but they would like to move when they think things are right. And they also object to the fact that the TSP, in their view, has very limited choices. You know, the CSIG funds and then the life cycle funds. What's your take on that? I know your motto of investing is dare to be dull.
Yeah, and I happen to think the TSP is very dull, and that's the ultimate compliment that I could give it. You know, it's hard to argue that people shouldn't have choices. Unfortunately, those people that say they're not market timers and want more choices will absolutely make a lot of trades. Those trades correlate to lower returns. They will do the wrong things at the wrong time. So I understand the logic of wanting more choices. And, of course, those choices are always what has gone up. You know, they want REITs, now that REITs have performed actually quite well so far since the turn of the century. They want precious metals. They wanted high tech when the tech bubble was going. So I understand the want for more choice, but it will result in lower returns.
Okay, I mean, that's just a universal law. Have you ever debated with any of these people?
I debate with market timers, you know, all the time. I go to parties and people, you know, talk about their winners and, of course, don't mention their losers. Everybody is above average.
Everybody that I know that goes to Las Vegas, and I love it there. I'm not a gambler, but everybody that I know that goes there either wins or breaks even. And I don't understand how they have all these expensive hotels and relatively modest prices.
You mean you don't think they built the billion-dollar hotels to give money away?
Yes. Everyone I know either wins or at worst breaks even. So, Alan, what's so good about the TSP?
Well, what's so good about the TSP is that they're very broad choices. You know, with the C and the S fund, you can own the entire U.S. With the international, you can own most, unfortunately not all, of the international. You don't own emerging markets or Canada. And 0.025%. You know, my lowest cost investments are 0.06%. So, you know, 2.5 times as much. So there's a lot of research that shows that having too many choices results in, you know, paralysis of analysis. And it's just a beautiful plan. And I've written that it's the model for all 401k plans. And I want in. I want a job. I'll work for a dollar.
Bring all your cash in. When you talk about daring to be dull, I know you said in the past that if you're excited by it and if you're having fun doing it, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah, that's a warning sign that you're really enjoying investing, that you think you're going to get rich really quick. You know, our brain thinking that we're about to make a quick killing. If you put it in an MRI, it's exactly the same as a coke addict about to get their next fix. So investing really should be like watching paint dry. I mean, you really need to be there in the long run. And those people that say they're not market timers but want to move in and out, they're in denial.
I love the story you tell about your son, and I know he's like all of us. He's getting on in years now, but your book was called How to Invest Like an 8-year-old or a second grader.
Yeah, how a second grader beats Wall Street, and he's now taller than me.
Okay, and this second grader was beating Wall Street, and you said he had a simple formula. Can you kind of set the stage for that? Why you wrote this book and what it was about?
Well, you know, as my son was growing up, I was teaching him, you know, lessons in life about don't put all your eggs in one basket, you know, buy things when they're on sale. And I was realizing that many of my clients were trying to do just the opposite. So the book is not about my genius son, although like any dad, I think I do have a genius son. It's about how when money doesn't mean anything to you, how it's easy to follow simple rules like buying the whole market, like not getting into something after it's gone up.
So he really did beat Wall Street as a 7- and 8-year-old, huh?
Yeah, well, he must, because if he owns the entire stock market at the lowest cost, he's got to beat a model where you pay one expert a lot of money to try to outsmart another expert. It's just a mathematical certainty.
One of the things that people like about the TSP, people like you, outsiders who want to get in, and by the way, I think John Bogle, the founder of Vanguard and the godfather of index funds, we had him on the show a couple of times, and he said the same thing. It's the best one around, and he resents the fact that so many mutual funds charge excessive fees. So a lot of people are fans of the TSP. When the market crashed, or what we took for a crash a couple of years ago, an awful lot of federal workers, some of them hung on, but a number of them, after a while, and I talked to them, I had friends, and they said, I just can't stand it any longer, and they switched over to the G Fund, the super safe Treasury Securities, never has a bad day G Fund. And at least they felt better, but they were selling low, correct?
Absolutely. And again, the better you feel about investing, the worse you're probably likely to do.
So how can you shake this, or can you?
You've kind of got to endure the pain. It hurts when markets sink to rebalance to get back to your target allocation, which is exactly what the life cycle funds do for you, by the way. And then when something is going up, it hurts to sell some, you know, to get back to the asset allocation. So, in other words, all of our instincts that led us, you know, to survive fail us when it comes to investing. If you get an instinct to do something, you know, try to resist it or even try to do the opposite.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, that's easier said than done. Relax, don't worry about it. But I've heard various financial planners also talk about the sleep at night rule, that if you literally cannot sleep, if you wake up in the middle of the night and say, you know, what am I doing, or I can't stand this, what do those people do?
Well, I will tell you that I think probably more than half investors don't belong in the market. They would be better off in, you know, a CD staying there, or that the never have a bad day G fund, than to get into something after it's gone up only to panic and sell after it's gone down. So I agree that if you're going to move in and out of the market, you'd probably better off out of the market.
That's very interesting. I've never heard anybody say that half the investors probably shouldn't be in the market. We need to take a short break here on 1500 AM. We'll be right back talking with Alan Roth.
CTO of the U.S. Air Force on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by EMC.
As we come out with more devices, we have to be able to send the data to that device. And so what you're going to see someone as more of an IP cellular network in the sky, where we're all going to interlink with each other. But again, security, data, big data, quick response time, and the devices are all key essential elements that we are going to see in the future.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Virtualization delivers big benefits, but traditional storage and backup can't handle the increased demands of virtual environments. Get on track with EMC Next Generation Unified Storage and Backup, optimized for VMware. Run virtual applications 3 times faster and reduce VMware backup times by 90%. Streamline with VM management and single-step restores. Decrease application storage by 50% and reduce backup storage by 40 to 60 times. EMC products available on GSA through government acquisitions.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your D.C. home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens march toward the Super Bowl.
One deep, far sideline, end zone, caught, touchdown, Anquan Boldin. Throws, he's got Rice, 5-yard line, turns the corner, in, touchdown, Ravens.
Catch all the action as the Ravens take on the Cleveland Browns, Saturday, December 24th. The pregame starts at 12:30 on 1500 AM.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Thorn.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, John Dedon, my partner at Odin Feldman & Pittleman, and Wendy Payne, who is the owner and operator of a company called Life Stage Transitions. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue, or red, or in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Alan Roth. He is a columnist for CBS Money Watch. And, Alan, we have a link to you in my column, The Federal Report, today on our homepage. But you put out a newsletter, do you not?
Yeah, it's a monthly newsletter of some of the columns that I write for CBS MoneyWatch.
I'm on the list. I couldn't remember how often it was. How can people get that?
They can go to my website, which, believe it or not, is daretobedull.com, which is how we met, actually.
Yes.
And click subscribe, and it's free, but your listeners can get it for half off.
You know, it's funny. I was telling somebody about how we met. I was in a speaking tour with another Washington Post reporter, John Schwartz, and he said he covered science, and he said his mantra was to dare to be dull, and that is not hype stories, not build them up and to the point where the researchers didn't recognize the story when you wrote about it. And I thought, dare to be dull, that's what I want to do on the federal beat. Keep it, you know, keep an even keel and not hype it. And I mentioned it one time in a column, and then you called and said, actually, and you had as close to patented as can be, and that is your email address. But that's a neat side story. You know, during the break, I'm thinking about the wisdom of what you said, that maybe half the people should not be in the market at all or should not be investing in any way, shape, or form. Would a way around that for federal workers, and if your mutual fund offers it, your 401k offers it, to be in one of these life cycle funds?
Yeah, if they can stay there. But don't forget, the life cycle funds are going to move up and down with the market, and investors can panic. I think a way to get there and stay there is to pretend that the money's gone, that you've already lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you set the benchmark to anchor it against it, that it's still worth something, you feel better about it. But, there's no way of protecting somebody, you know, from their own emotions.
Well, and also, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when people say, I made a killing today or I lost money last year, I mean, isn't it really true that you don't gain or lose anything until you cash in?
Well, you know, in some sense, it's true until, you know, you have the money in your pocket. But, you know, if your portfolio goes down 20%, you've lost it. You can end the chance of getting it back by, you know, panicking and selling, but you have lost it. You know, the market value has gone down that 20%.
You do a regular column for the CBS, and you do your newsletters, and you counsel people. Where do you get your ideas for your columns? Because, you know, it seems to me there's so many financial writers out there who bill themselves as experts, and obviously you are one, or CBS wouldn't have you in the stable. How do you get your ideas?
Oh, you know, they come from clients in various investments that they've been in. I get many, you know, ideas from the media. You know, for instance, USA Today just did a survey of what the experts thought the stock market would do next year, you know, not mentioning the fact that the same author from the interviewed those same experts who said the markets would be up 10 to 15% this year. So it's pretty easy to get the ideas.
You know, horror story, and I guess everybody that's in the business has them. I had a very good friend, work friend, and this was during the 1990s, and, you know, you couldn't lose money in the market. I mean, it was almost impossible to pick something that wasn't looking good. We took some of our money out of our company 401k, they allowed that, and invested it on our own. And a number of other people did as well. I don't know of anybody that made more, that did as well as those who stayed in our 401k plan, which was invested with Vanguard, you know, one of the best funds around. A friend of mine ran into another friend of mine who retired, and he was in a computer store. This is 8-9 years ago. He was in a computer store, and he was buying two computers, and the one guy asked the other, he said, are you getting that for your wife? And he said, no, I need the second one to handle my investments. And an alarm bell went off, and this guy was a CPA and very knowledgeable about money and finance. I called him the next day, heard him, and I said, you're not day trading, are you? And he said, oh, no, that's for suckers. But he is actively managing his account. Bottom line, he had about $300,000, as I can recall, in his account. And, again, this was years ago. Within 18 months, he had nothing.
And he probably felt like his $300,000 was going to be worth $3 million shortly. The better you feel, the the bigger fall you're about to take.
Well, and, you know, during the 1990s, particularly those of us who had not been through obviously the Great Depression or even the recession of the 1950s, those of us who hadn't been through it or maybe were too young to remember anything, the 1990s were a period of, what did the Fed chairman call it, irrational exuberance?
Yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have a bias as humans. We look at the recent past and we overweight it, forgetting, you know, the more distant past, such as the Great Depression. So when markets are up, we tend to think, hey, more good times ahead. When markets are down, we tend to think the next Great Depression is coming. But neither good times nor bad times last forever.
So do you have any predictions for what let's say the S&P 500, that would be the C fund, or the Wilshire 5000, which is the other, the S fund. Do you have any predictions for what they're likely to do over, well, you know, 12 months, over the next 12 months?
Well, my prediction is not going to be very satisfying.
Right.
You know, I think they will go up about 8%. Plus or minus the standard deviation of 40% on either side. There's a 95% chance that will happen. But I can predict something almost as important. If markets go up, people will then put money into the CS and the I fund or stock funds outside of the TSP. If markets go down, they will pull money out. They will do the wrong things.
So almost either way. So you are, I take it, a big fan of the life cycle funds.
Yeah, I think the L funds are great. There is a way to, you know, get more tax advantage if you have funds outside of the TSP, but I think the L funds are terrific.
And what about, there are some people who say, in fact, I haven't heard anybody say they're too risky. I've heard some people say they're too conservative, and that is that they're too heavily, they're not weighted enough in stocks for the different funds. And I have a friend who, although he's retired, instead of being in the 2010 fund, which would have been his present income fund, he's put his money, I think, in the 2030. Do you think that's a wise move? Because he wanted to be a little wilder.
I tell people that picking their asset allocation is the second most important decision they'll make. The most important is the commitment to stick to it. So if you can't be right on the asset allocation, be consistent. So you know, I don't know your friend, you know, what mm-hmm. his total portfolio is like, and you know how much risk he should be taking, but be consistent. Don't move from the 2030 to the 2010. So don't keep changing things.
For people who want more options and don't like the limited choice in the TSP, what about them investing 5% so they can get that 5% government match, which is a tax-deferred pay raise, and then taking the rest of their money, the money they would have put in the TSP, and going out on their own? Would you recommend that for somebody who wants to walk on the wilder side?
Well, you know, I have my own little gambling portfolio where I have, you know, various rules and, you know, to kind of exercise a piece of my brain that wants to have a little bit of fun. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd recommend that they take a little bit of money and do whatever they want with it. If it's ugly things like options to buying individual stocks, et cetera, it's fine to take a little bit of money, but just don't put your whole family's retirement based on becoming the next Warren Buffett.
I guess that's the same as the people who go to Vegas or Atlantic City and earmark X amount to gamble with and stick to it.
Exactly. So I love Las Vegas, and I don't win there.
Yeah. I have. I don't gamble. I'm not competent enough to gamble. Well, Alan, thank you so much for being with us. Any parting thoughts before we sign off?
Nope, just want to say happy holidays. I'm thrilled to have known you over the years, and appreciate all that you do.
We've had a lot of fun, and let me know the next time you're coming to the nation's capital.
I sure will.
Thank you, Alan Roth. Thank you all for listening. Hope you have a happy holidays, and we'll see you back here next Wednesday. Stay safe.